The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Wow. It didn't work out well for the Democrats in Georgia.
Again.
This is their fourth or
yeah, it's is
fifth.
It four? I think, yeah.
I think it's four that they have.
Oh, they were all salivating over it, too.
Yeah.
This is going to be the real Trump test.
Yeah, they're gonna take and just spend a few dollars to make sure that they can show America what's coming. I think they showed America last night that possibly the only person more unpopular than Donald Trump is, anyone in the Democratic Party. Where do they go from here and what happened? We begin there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Kansas, Montana, South Carolina, and now Georgia. The Democrats are going to go one of two ways. They're either going to get away from the Nancy Pelosi's of the world, and they're going to get away from the Bernie Sanders of the world, and they're going to see that America does not want that, or they are going to go hardcore to the Bernie Sanders of the world, and that's what I think they probably will do. The Democrats were going for a moderate approach, if you will. That's kind of what they were trying to sell. Hey, we're just like you, and we're moderate, and we just think some of these things are crazy, and but you know, we're going to fix all of these things. And the Republicans just held up a sign with Nancy Pelosi's face. I remember her.
It's what they did in Montana too.
Yep.
If you would have been there during that time period, they made it seem like Gianforte was running against Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. Well, Nancy Pelosi is. It's not a personal thing for Nancy Pelosi. I mean, it's what the Republicans did or what the Democrats did with Newt Gingrich after Newt Gingrich became unpopular. For a while, Newt Gingrich was very popular because he made the contract with America, and America was saying at the time, I want some things done. And he went in and he got those things done. He did the opposite of what the Republicans are doing now. They just... What is it that you want us to do? Okay, good. Let me write these down. Is this it? Yes. Okay, I contract with you. We're going to do these things. And then actually do them. That's not done in America anymore. What happened to Newt Gingrich was they started to see Newt Gingrich, the country started to see Newt Gingrich as kind of this slimy guy that's just in there and kind of, you know, back of the room, fixing deals, et cetera, et cetera. And so then then America was prepared to see Newt Gingrich in a different light. Well, that's how people see Nancy Pelosi, not as a fighter, but somebody who said, we're going to pole vault, we're going to do whatever we have to do to get this done. Well, I warn the Republicans, the way they're doing healthcare right now is worse. And this is saying something, is worse than the way Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama did the health care bill.
You think? I don't know. That's quite a statement.
They were asked yesterday to do a soft vote, and none of them had even not only just read the bill hadn't even been finished. I mean, how are you going to say yes or no? You haven't even written it yet. It's not like, well, I haven't read it. You haven't written it. How am I expected to say yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes,
now you
yes.
Can't, but you could bet. I think, though, you could say,
yes.
I think pretty fairly, like, here's the general way we're going. Would you even consider this? That's an
yes,
okay conversation to have.
You could
at this
do
point.
That.
Here's that. The basic things we're going to put in the bill. What do you guys think? I think that's a fair
But we were also saying at the time, we're the group of people who said, look, it's not right to say American people are going to have to pass the bill to see what's in the bill. No, that was wrong.
Right. And they promised the debate on that, too.
Right.
And
we're not going to get a debate either.
I think the line here on the healthcare thing, which is, by the way, I think the most probably if you want to take one thing out of this Georgia election, probably it protects the healthcare process and the tax reform process, because if they were to have lost this election, the Republicans would have all been running from every single bill.
Oh, yeah.
So this probably protects them. I don't know that it does anything for 2018 or 2020.
No, I don't think so either.
It's an indication, I suppose. They held this.
I think it will actually do something for 2018 in this regard. It will show them that no matter how much money they spent, it's not going to matter if your message is wrong. And their message is wrong. And I don't trust their divining rod. I don't think they don't have any idea why their message is wrong.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. There's an argument to be made too that they put so much attention on this, it actually inspired the Republicans. They put so much money and focused this and made such a big deal about this election that that more Republicans showed up. For example, they were much more heavily favored and there was no real conversation about South Carolina, which wound up being closer. Mm-hmm. Yesterday. It's partially that. But I think with the health care bill, if they're now going to continue to pursue it, which would be interesting. I mean, I want it to be repealed. I don't like the way they've gone so far. But they have to have some level of conversation to form something so it's not just being picked apart in the press every single step.
I agree.
Initial negotiation needs to be like you need to come up with something to talk about a debate.
I agree. But what they're saying they're going to do now is keep it under wraps until they pass it because they don't want anybody picking it apart. Well,
yeah, that's not
this
good.
Is, that's not good.
That. You can't do that. And if they try to do that, that's ridiculous. Right. That is what the Democrats did.
Right.
I mean, you have to have a debate publicly. But you could look at these results in two ways. I mean, I think you could look at it and you say, hey, they're 4-0. That's great. You know, hey, they're not having negative effects on it.
And in every case, they made it about Trump, not the person who was really running. So they make it out to be like, okay, this is another big Trump test. And you're going to see just how unpopular this guy is. America hates him. And the Republicans have won every single time.
So you could look at it that way. And I think that's
really backfiring big time on him.
Although I think you could look at the data a couple different ways here. Listen to this. This is the last two. This is how these four have gone. 2012 president in Kansas. They won by 29 points, Republicans. In 2016, won by 29 points. The special election, they won by 7. So 29, 29, 7.
It's still impressive, though, when you take into account
what's happening.
Just how negative they've been. But no.
And just how low Donald Trump's numbers are as well.
Yeah.
The beating he's taken in the press.
Huge beating.
The lackluster performance by the GOP itself, the problems the president has created and the problems that have been created by the press. When you couple all of those things together, we would have all said, 2 years ago, if any other president, let me put it this way, if any other president would be going through, right or wrong, what this president is going through, I think only Ronald Reagan could have weathered it. Everybody else would have been dead. Republicans, dead.
But I think the point of this, though, is these are heavily favored GOP districts that are getting kind of close.
Yes,
that's not necessarily a gigantic positive.
But it's also not 2016, 2014, 2012.
That's kind of the point here, though, right? I mean, you're right. If you're answering it was really Republican and now it's not quite as Republican. But the reason for that is because things aren't so great for the president or things aren't so great in today. Well, that's the point.
That's the point people are making on this. But you could read. I'm trying to read also. I agree with you that the GOP is in trouble. If the DNC gets their act together, which I don't see happening, they could beat the GOP in GOP districts. But I believe,
and they would have to, by the
way, believe they are in worse shape now themselves. They don't have the youth. The youth sees them as fraud. They don't even have the socialists. The Democrats are frauds to people who actually believe in Bernie Sanders. So that coalition that the Democrats tried to build is as weak as the coalition in the GOP, yeah, as real, true, diehard, small government, constitutional, conservative libertarians. The people who lean there, they don't look at the GOP as their savior. They don't look. They'll take it if they have to, but they're not taking it really anymore. They'll really be selective. Well, that's the way the DNC is. We're just not hearing that highlighted all the time on television because they don't want to talk about that. Oh, well, Bernie is a part of our. No, he's not. No, he's not. And his supporters don't like you guys. So if they get their act together, yes, they could make a dent. If the GOP gets his act, whichever one gets their act together, otherwise, may I suggest, the winning strategy in 18 is more like what they did in France. And it may be the winning strategy in 2020 if it's not just a clear-cut win for Donald Trump.
Which is what?
What happened in France, and I hope we're smarter than this, but maybe not, somebody left the party, okay? Macron was like a Democrat. He left the party. A Republican could do this too. Leave the party. I've had enough of it. And I'm not that party. I'm not this party. I'm my own independent
Because their party, party. The party he won with has only been around for like a year,
yeah, right?
Right? It's incredible.
Right. And what happened was he convinced people that both sides were ridiculous, even though he was in the party. Okay, he was. You know what it is? Mm-hmm. It's who's the guy from Utah that we considered voting for?
Oh, Evan McMullen. Oh,
yeah. Evan McMullen.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy. That's exactly what Macron did. He was a big part of the party, and then he left and said, "This is ridiculous." And you're like, "But you were just in the party, and I'm not sure. I mean, you're saying a lot of good things, but I'm not sure you're not still part of the party. You're just kind of hedging your bet for the party's sake. You know what I mean? And I don't mean to ascribe, you know, such nefarious principles to McMullen because I like him. But that's really what happened in France. And then they started to build a coalition in the center. Now, I don't think that's going to work. I hope we're smarter than that. And I don't think it's going to work in France, you know, long term. It's not going to actually solve anything in France.
Right.
But I think that is the best winning strategy if you're looking to play politics. The real winning strategy is actually stand for something.
What a concept.
Yeah. Actually be a Marxist. And run on a Marxist socialist platform, or actually be a constitutionalist and run
as such.
As a constitutionalist.
Yeah, nobody has the guts.
Nobody has the guts to do either of those. Yeah,
no.
Yeah. All right. Our sponsor this half hour is Simply Safe. You see the video of the neighbors taking down a burglar in New Mexico? Middle of the day, burglar breaks into a man's home, and thanks to some motion sensors, he was alerted. The owner of Simply Safe was alerted. He calls some friends who took down the burglar before the police could get there. He calls neighbors. Would you do that? I remember my grandfather and my uncle did that. And I remember him. I remember them with their rifles walking this burglar down the center of their small little street to meet the police officer as they were coming around the corner. Because they knew somebody was breaking into a house, and they all ran and got the guy. And I remember walking behind going, my grandpa's a hero. This just happened. He calls neighbors. They take down the burglar. Police get there. You don't have to spend your time worrying about something. Stop the intruders in their tracks with Simply Safe Home Security. you're going to know what is happening in your house. And whether you call neighbors or you just have it automatically call police, it's up to you. But you're in control of your security, and you can build that arsenal for all day, all night protection in under an hour with the sensors, the glass break sensors, the motion, high definition security camera. You're not going to know exactly what is happening in your home. SimplySafeBeck.com. Get a special 10% discount off your home security system when you order right now. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Here is the... was this the acceptance speech or was this the losing speech? I'm not really...
It's hard to tell when you hear it.
Yeah. Here's what happened in Georgia last night with the Democrat who lost.
Across the country, and for people around the world, this small community in Georgia, which has become the epicenter of politics, sometimes to my chagrin, for months now, and it's had nothing to do with me. It never has.
It's an easy thing to say when you lost. Nothing to do with me.
It's about you. It's about an extraordinary community at an extraordinary moment in history. The first opportunity in this country to make a statement about values that can still unite people.
Yeah. Hey, wait. Did you win or did you lose?
At a time when politics has been dominated by fear and hatred and scapegoating and division, this community stood up. Women in this community stood up.
Right, the GOP elected a woman. Is that
you
what
did.
It did.
And you picked this campaign up, and you picked me up, and you picked Alicia up, and you carried us on your shoulders.
And you took us all the way to a humiliating defeat.
In the most expensive house race in history. Yay!
Wow. It's really weird. It's weird. It's really weird.
And it's funny because, I mean, it does say something about this tactic because, you know, we could go through all the races, but it's the only race they did not improve on dramatically from the presidential campaign. The Democrats, out of the four, only this one is the only one they didn't actually gain any ground.
After spending
all
that money.
Which is amazing. They spent tens of millions of dollars to win this one race.
I don't think money matters anymore. I really don't. I think we are so aware of the games that are played. We just don't believe it
anymore.
Well,
I mean, look at the presidential race, right? I mean, obviously Trump got a lot of free media, but I mean, he spent nothing even close to what Hillary spent.
He spent like $1.97.
$1.97. They went to the dollar store twice.
Brilliant.
And they got a slight discount on one of the trips for $1.97.
He said, we'll let you have this for 97 cents.
That was really nice. Mm-hmm. It was a big supporter. That's why. A big Trump supporter.
I mean, it's remarkable. There is a fundamental shift in America. And, you know, I want to spend some time. There's a great article today in National Review about we need to go back and listen to some farewell addresses. And there are three farewell addresses that I personally, and I was so happy to see the National Review pick the same three farewell addresses from presidents that if we would have heeded just these three, we wouldn't be in the trouble we're in now. The first one is George Washington. And George Washington warned us about these two parties and becoming patriotic and having loyalty to the parties. He said that will kill us in the end, as well as foreign entanglements, which we've done. The second one was Eisenhower. His farewell address was the military-industrial complex. If we don't watch what's happening with the Pentagon and the military, they are going to get us involved in everything and will spend us into oblivion and cause all kinds of foreign entanglements. And then the third one, I'll give that one to you and play a bit of it next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We're so glad that you are here. Coming up in about a half an hour, I am I'm going to share something with you. I asked some people in the House and the Senate. I asked a couple of fiction writers. I asked some business leaders. What do you think would have happened to the economy if a week ago everybody on that baseball diamond had been shot and killed? If we were a nation in mourning today and we were just finishing up the last funeral, the last flag-draped coffin, what would America look like today, a week later? So I've put all of them together. Now, they've all said, don't use my name. I think except for Brad Thor, who was really like, I don't care. So I'm not going to tell you who said what. And this is pure fiction, pure speculation. The reason why I'm doing it is because twofold. One, I don't think that we have any idea how fragile, how close to the edge we really are, and how one big event can change everything. Now, I didn't tell these guys what my speculation was. I just asked them a series of questions. What would the Fed do? What would DHS do? What would the president do? What would Congress do? What would the Senate do? What would happen on Wall Street? What would North Korea do? Russia? What would happen over in Europe and the Middle East? I just asked a series of questions and let them fill in the blanks. I'm going to give you their scenario, the composite scenario of what we would be looking at America today had we spent the last week burying congressmen and senators. It's coming up in about a half an hour. It is truly remarkable. Truly remarkable. There is also another story today that I want to hit on from National Review. There's a couple of stories. But one of them is on the advice of presidents. When they give a farewell address, George Washington was obviously the first to give one, and he never delivered it. He wrote it, and then instead of delivering it in a speech, he just sent it to the newspapers. And the newspapers covered it, and it used to be that you used to have to study his farewell address. There were three documents that you had to study. One of them was his farewell address, Constitution, Declaration of Independence. And up until about 1920, his farewell address was studied by every generation. You couldn't pass the eighth grade unless you knew it. Most people have never even read it, let alone heard of it. It's one of the best documents in American history because it is alive today. It shows you where we have gone wrong. The other one that I think is really, really important, and National Review agrees, that is the address that I think is the last risky yet totally honest warning any president has ever given us. And that is Eisenhower. Eisenhower's farewell address is where we get the term the vast military-industrial complex. Here's a guy who was the winning general of World War II. Here is the commander of all Allied forces in World War II. He grew up in the military. He's a military fan. And he saw a change in the 1950s because of the Cold War. And he realized we're not going to descale or de-escalate. Up until World War II and then Korea in the 1950s, we would call an army together and we would go fight. But our army before World War II, they were literally training with broomsticks. We didn't even have enough guns. People would bring their own guns from home to train with. That's a civilian army. That's the way we always were. And so we would call people together and say, hey, there's a war coming. Let's all get together and we would train. In the 1950s, the world changed because of nuclear war. And we realized we could all be dead in 12 minutes. We have to have a standing army. We have to now have nuclear weapons at the ready. So if we have that, we have to have a standing military. We have to have a military industrial complex that is building and researching the latest technology to be able to do things. In his farewell address, he said, warning America, warning, we no longer are going to send these people home to the private sector. They are now here. And as everything, unless you keep your eye on them, they are going to grow in power. And before you know it, they could be leading us around on a leash. Now, here's a general saying, beware of a military-industrial complex. Beware of the collusion between the military and the capitalist companies that are going to get rich off of those military sales. Extraordinarily brave, and one that only kooks have listened to. Have you noticed that the vast military-industrial complex was a joke for most of our life? It was a conspiracy theory? I don't think that that is by happenstance. I think that is people in the military-industrial complex helping that in to be a joke. Oh, I know you got to be careful of the black helicopters. Well, yeah, you kind of do. You kind of do. It could get out of control, as George Washington said. Only those with a healthy respect for fire and what it is and what it does and how out of control it can be should be tending the fire. And that's all that Eisenhower was saying. If you don't have a healthy respect for what capitalism and the military can do, you shouldn't be tending to it because it can go bad. Then there was one other speech. One other speech that I think was misunderstood. And we were so fat and sassy at the time that I don't think anybody really listened to it. I want to play just about five paragraphs of the farewell address of Ronald Reagan.
Finally, there is a great tradition of warnings in presidential farewells. And I've got one that's been on my mind for some time. But oddly enough, it starts with one of the things I'm proudest of in the past 8 years. The resurgence of national pride that I called the new patriotism. This national feeling is good, but it won't count for much, and it won't last unless it's grounded in thoughtfulness and knowledge.
Stop. You hear that? National pride is good, but it doesn't count for anything unless it is grounded in kindness and knowledge. I contend we have neither of those right now. On any side, that our national dialogue is not grounded in knowledge. Who are you hearing talk about the real issues, the ones that face you, and talk about real solutions? Who are you hearing talk about real solution with kindness and with knowledge? How many of us are responding back with knowledge or kindness? Ronald Reagan said it won't account for much unless it's coupled with those two.
An informed patriotism is what we want. And are we doing a good enough job teaching our children what America is and what she represents in the long history of the world?
Stop. That's a question. And you can answer that question now. You couldn't answer it then. Are we doing a good enough job of teaching our children the history of America? That was a question back then. And I believe my parents probably said yes. And if I were a parent back then, I'd say yes. And if I were a parent in 2000, I'd say, well, kind of, pretty much. If I were a parent in 2008, I would say, well, it's kind of bad. If I'm a parent in 2017, I'm like, look at the failure. We didn't even see how rotted this system is. You can get your doctorate in history in, what is it, 90% of colleges nationwide and not be required to take any American history. Now, how can you be a doctor in world history? How can you have your degree in world history and not have to take any American history? That doesn't make sense. That's like studying world history. Well, I'm an expert on world history. Of course, I didn't study England or Rome. What? How's that possible? Well, then you're not a world historian. You might be a historian on Asia and the Middle East, but that's only part of the world. He goes on.
Of us who are over 35 or so years of age grew up in a different America. We were taught very directly what it means to be an American. And we absorbed almost in the air a love of country and an appreciation of its institutions. If you didn't get these things from your family, you got them from the neighborhood, from the father down the street who fought in Korea, or the family who lost someone at Anzio. Or you could get a sense of patriotism from school. And if all else failed, you could get a sense of patriotism from the popular culture.
Stop.
The movies.
He's talking in what, 1989? He's getting ready to leave office in 1989, and he's saying, we used to have this in popular culture. Go back in popular culture in 1989, and it's practically Uncle Sam. Everybody's almost in Uncle Sam pants compared to now.
Oh, my God. Watch things like Ghostbusters. It's like a tribute to capitalism.
Yes.
When you go back and watch it, you can't believe how excited they are. We were talking about this the other day of like when they're saying, wait a minute, you don't want to go into the private sector. They actually expect results there.
Right.
I mean, throughout that entire era, there's.
So now you think about what culture is doing. Remember, entertainment creates culture, but culture creates values. Our culture was creating values that were good, kind, gentle, strong, American. Our entertainment is none of those. So our entertainment is creating this culture. What are the values that are being mined and minted right now in our culture? They are not what we grew up with, and he was my president when I was a teenager.
Celebrated democratic values and implicitly reinforced the idea that America was special. TV was like that too through the mid-60s. But now we're about to enter the 90s and some things have changed. Younger parents aren't sure that an unambivalent appreciation of America is the right thing to teach modern children. And as for those who create the popular culture, well-grounded patriotism is no longer the style. Our spirit is back, but we haven't re-institutionalized it. We've got to do a better job of getting across that America is freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of enterprise, and freedom is special and rare. It's fragile. It needs production. So we've got to teach history based not on what's in fashion, but what's important. Why the pilgrims came here, who Jimmy Doolittle was, and what those 30 seconds over Tokyo meant. You know, 4 years ago, on the 40th anniversary of D-Day, I read a letter from a young woman writing to her late father, who had fought on Omaha Beach. Her name was Lisa Zanatta Hen, and she said, "We will always remember, we will never forget what the boys of Normandy did." Well, let's help her keep her word.
It's an amazing call to arms, and one that needs to be heard again, and one to be answered. And I want to bring you along for a ride that we're going to take, because we are going to answer that call in a different way. Sponsor this half hour is Mercury Real Estate. I want to tell you about Joe and Kathleen. Joe was active duty military. He was transferred to a new base at the same time the market collapsed, and they began to sell their Michigan home, and it was impossible. 2008, imagine. So he was blessed for a few years with good renters. Joe and Kathleen now have decided to try to sell their house again in 2015. Well, it was there for the market, and then he decided, you know what, I'm going to try realestateagentsitrust.com. He went to the website, got a call from an agent within 2 minutes. They're now living in Missouri, trying to sell a home 500 miles away. Not ideal, but the agent took care of everything. 5 days, they got an offer, $2,100 over their asking price. You want to sell your home on time and for the most money? Do what Joe and Kathleen have done. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Find a great real estate agent that will help you. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's really amazing how fast the world is moving now. What is happening with Uber and the CEO? Stu, are you familiar with this? He's now taking a leave of absence. Uber is, you know,
he's out now, right?
Yeah,
right.
He's out, and
I just signed a new one.
You know, real problems at Uber. Here's a company that has changed the world and is in complete disarray. How fast you can fall in today's world is truly remarkable.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. We had another brush with a Russian jet yesterday. The Brussels bomb suspect was Moroccan and known to police. It looks like the shooter in Washington, according to police breaking now, acted alone and was not a terrorist. Well, hang on. Yes, he was. His idea was to terrorize, intimidate, cause a revolution, and I don't know, assassinate people. So I don't know how we say he wasn't a part of a terrorist operation. Yes, he wasn't in Al-Qaeda. He was the sole member of his group, but this was a terroristic act. And an act of assassination, and an act that could have changed the country and the world, possibly forever. Now, that's quite an amazing statement to make. But as the country begins to discuss who he is, and here's the information the police have, I want to take a look back 7 days ago today and look at what happened on the baseball diamond with new eyes. We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It was exactly 1 week ago that James T. Hodgkinson opened fire on 30 Republican congressmen as they practiced for a charity baseball game in Virginia. Witnesses say, and police now confirm, 50 to 100 shots were fired. It took 9 minutes for the police to officially respond, after which they engaged Hodgkinson in a five-minute shootout. That means the assassin had 14 total minutes to get off as many shots as possible, and anyone could see the Republicans were sitting ducks. In the end, after between 50 and 100 shots, 14 minutes, and 30 targets, only five people were injured. Only one of them was injured critically and is recovering. We know that the majority House Whip, Steve Scalise, went under the knife several times, had multiple surgeries over the weekend, but his condition has now been upgraded from critical to severe. And if it wasn't for the truly heroic actions of two Capitol Police officers who were there in the security detail, all of this would have been much, much worse. In fact, I'm going to go beyond that. We spent a week talking about, wow, how lucky these congressmen were, how lucky they all were to have the security there, to be able to minimize the damage that was received. How do you explain how a shooter with two guns who fired 50 to 100 rounds, firing 14 minutes into a crowd of 30 people, not only didn't kill anyone, but only managed to injure five people? How do you explain that? We know now that the act was premeditated. A week ago, we didn't know if this guy just walked up and said to a congressman, hey, are these Republicans or Democrats? And then just happened to have a gun with him. No. We know now that this was premeditated. We know that he was an assassin because he had a list of all of the Republicans he was planning on killing. The planning alone, the level of planning that was involved. He had the means, he had the motivation, he had the will. He was willing to give his life to kill as many Republican congressmen as he could. How did this guy fail? Is it perhaps divine providence? Now, to answer this, I wanted to come up with a way to show you what I think we need to imagine here. We need to see in our mind's eye what the world would be like today, a week later, as we were finally putting the last coffin in the ground. What would our country look like during the next hours, the next few days, and the next weeks? What would be happening today if he would have been successful in taking out 30 Republican congressmen? So here's what I did. Over the weekend, I reached out to security experts. I wrote out to a few fiction writers, a few business people, some actual lawmakers, some senators, some congressmen. And I said, look, I'm not asking you to tell me exactly. I'm asking you to tell me what your gut says, knowing the situation and your area of expertise. What do you think would have happened in a realistic scenario? I have taken them and folded them all into one cohesive storyline to show you what these many experts all believe in their area of expertise would have happened. The next day, a week from tomorrow, the opening bell, or a week last Thursday, the opening bell for the New York Stock Exchange would be set to ring. But the futures would be down so far that we probably would have closed it and waited until the following Monday. So the stock exchange, just like it did on 9/11, we hold it until the following Monday, until we can get our sea legs. When we rang the bell Monday morning, we needed to have a rally in the stock market. The president probably would have said, go spend money. The futures would be way down, leading into the open, as the rest of the world would believe America had finally cracked. Within 5 minutes, experts tell me they think the New York Stock Exchange, the circuit breakers would have been tripped and the markets would have been shut down. They would have tried to open those circuit breakers two more times to open the markets, only to have even bigger drops as people all rushed in to get out of the stock market. They would have then announced some Orwellian week of mourning that was going to be announced, would give the markets a chance to remain closed until the following week. Behind the scenes, the Federal Reserve would enact massive, highly secretive futures manipulation to help inject stability. This is what happened after 9/11. This is what has happened before the Great Depression. They close the market. They get everybody who has big money and say, you have to get in on these futures. As the markets remain closed, the dollar would go into a free fall. Countries owning large amounts of U.S. debt would begin to contemplate dumping their sovereign funds and their dollar reserves. In the end, we believe they would decide to wait and see if things would worsen for the United States in the next few weeks. Partisan media would begin to stir the pot. In response, the violent leftists, such as Antifa, would take their movements to an entirely new level. Far-right counter-protests would engage them in the streets, and this would happen in most major metropolitan areas of the country. But the rest of the country would be frightened watching it and not know what to do. Then copycat attacks would begin on more local and federal lawmakers, possibly on the media as well. Congress would then go into action to decide we need to update the Patriot Act, a new Patriot Act-style law that would enable the NSA to go after Americans planning riots and attacks. Hate speech laws would crack down on Facebook and Twitter. The American president would make a speech calling for quick action. We need to act right now on health care reform, tax reform, and the balance of the Trump agenda. We need to send a message to the country and to those who oppose that the Donald J. Trump administration will not be deterred. We also need to provide security detail for every member of Congress and or a concealed carry permit for every member of Congress. Special elections would be called to replace the 30 congressmen that were killed, so all the legislation could be fast-tracked. Rioting would intensify. Polling areas would be threatened with firebombing if they opened as scheduled. Martial law would be declared to ensure peaceful elections. Countries such as China, Brazil, and India, all the BRICS nations, would see their chance and begin dumping U.S. sovereign funds. Worst case scenario, the dollar would nosedive, martial law would stay in effect until the economy would stabilize. Our enemies abroad would look to capitalize on our weakness and the preoccupation with our internal problems. Iran would close the Straits of Hormuz, China mobilizing on the North Korean border, and Russia would finally fully invade the Ukraine. This, the experts that I went to all agreed would happen in the first month. Some have said that if Hodgkin's would have been successful, it would have created the largest social and political shift in modern history. I believe that's true. But in 14 minutes, with two guns, 50 to 100 shots, a plan, rehearsal in the woods, a kill list, how was it he was only able to shoot and hit five people and not kill any of them? We were at the doorstep to what have could have been the largest flashpoint in our nation's history. What happened a week ago? Most of us don't even care a week later. Most of us now look at this as old news. What we were all talking about last week, and we were all saying we have to have more tolerance for one another. That's long forgotten. That happened before last weekend. I believe this was divine providence. I fully believe that God intervened in this. Perhaps those Capitol police officers, this was the day they were born to live. Perhaps the flight paths of the bullets were changed. More likely, vision and fear was intensified in him as he squeezed the trigger. But I believe in just as much as I did in the American Revolution, it was God that made that happen. I believe in many ways, as Thomas Jefferson said, when I realize that God is just, I tremble for my country, because we wouldn't stop slavery. We were not worthy of his divine protection while we were enslaving people. We're not really worthy of his divine providence and protection now. But for some reason, I am very grateful that he gave it to us last week after looking at what could have been happening today. I thank My Patriot Supply for sponsoring this segment. My Patriot Supply knows that information is critical to preparation. You're not prepared unless you have information. You're not prepared unless you really understand how close we really can be to global change, how close we are to being, each of us, two paychecks away from not having any food on the table and being at the mercy of the government or somebody else. Information is really, really important, and it's a lifestyle. My Patriot Supply knows that a lot of your friends, you know, have said, well, you know, it's no big deal, that you know the truth, that things really haven't fundamentally changed. There's a lot of work to be done yet. And be prepared. So what they've done is they have put together a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. Now, that includes free shipping. You can prepare for a lot of things mentally, but until you've done the hard lifting, you haven't really prepared. My Patriot Supply was started with people who want a inexpensive way that is good, nutritious, and will last for 25 years, a good way to be able to make sure their family has food on the table no matter what happens. Come what may, be prepared. Go to preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com, 800-200-7163,
800-200-7163. This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I'm just looking at Danielle DiMartino Booth. She was she's a former financial columnist at the Dallas Morning News. She was 9 years as the advisor to the Fed chief here in the Federal Reserve in Dallas, Richard Fisher, who I have a lot of respect for. He was one of the only real guys fighting people like Janet Yellen. She now runs Money Strong, an economic advising firm. And she's coming back on with us here next hour. She's going to talk a little bit about, the Fed raised the interest rate. And she told us last time she was here, she said, the thing that I'm really watching are auto sales and the defaults on auto loans. And she said, we're very close to defaults on auto loans. And she said, that's the real test, because that's where people are the closest. When you're fighting to make ends meet, You got to have your car.
Got to have your car.
Yeah, and you start to default. If you start to see a lot of defaults on auto loans and a decrease in sales, what's going to happen is now you're starting to throw GM and all the car makers and the banking sector into crisis again. And she said that, to her, that is the tip of the iceberg that she's been watching. She said auto sales are down now by 5%. She also said there's a new survey out that shows Americans think that this is the worst time in 7 years to buy homes, to buy a home.
Well, not everyone.
Like who? Who would? Who
I don't know. I'm just saying that everyone thinks it's a bad time to buy.
Well, you're not buying a house, are you?
No, not me.
Pat, you're not buying a house, are you?
No,
yeah, I'm not.
You're not. No, I'm not buying a house.
Mm-mm.
Who else could be?
It's an interesting conversation we're having.
Oh my gosh, Stu, you're buying a house.
Yeah, I'm here too. Yeah.
Buying a house.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled about this. Is a great story. I'm glad you're bringing it to me today.
No, what Americans are saying now think of this, because Americans are always, we are always behind the curve. When things get hot, that's when Americans say, I got to buy a house.
Mm.
Okay. When they're at the bottom, that's not when Americans say to buy a house. We're at the top now. And this is only the second time that Americans have ever said, no, you don't want to buy a house right now.
Oh, you look at the housing indexes, which is one of the things you used a lot.
Case-Shiller.
The Case-Shiller and others that you used a lot when you were predicting the first housing
crisis.
Collapse.
Yeah.
And you'll see that actually they're quite a bit higher than they were when we had the actual collapse.
Yeah.
Meaning that maybe we're even more inflated than that time. That's why I'm buying now. You know, you want to get in there. Guys, how many times have you heard it? Buy high, sell low. That's what you want to do.
Right. That's what most
Americans are now saying this is the time to sell, not the time to buy.
So, no, I don't. My particular opinion is never is the time to buy.
Yeah, but why? So but, now you've lived this whole time.
Yes.
And you've been right for most of that time. I've been like, I can't tell you how many times I thought, you know, perhaps Stu is right. He should not own a house.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is definitely my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, circumstances push you into things that you don't want to do sometimes. I mean, I still work here. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hang on just a second.
That's one example.
Also, the minimum hourly wage now that you would need to make just to pay for your apartment. In Georgia, it's $11.46 an hour. In San Francisco, the $15 an hour. Now I got to help you.
No.
San Francisco, the minimum hourly wage required just to afford housing is $58.04.
Holy crap, man.
You want to talk about people hurting? There it is. She joins us next hour.
We are one.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
First day of summer. Illinois careens into a financial meltdown. And not even the lottery is safe. What a surprise. What? They don't have all that money in the lottery sitting there? Shut up! I thought for sure that they had that all. That's why I wouldn't have ever taken it in a lump sum.
Always take the lump sum.
Always take the lump sum. And there's also a new trend called tri-parenting. And I just want to give you this part. Tri-parenting is now legal in California. And it's gaining traction in other states. Bonner Bianchi, who's now 17, said her parents are just like anybody else. I just happen to have three of them. The big picture is you just have more people there to support you, and there's more love for you no matter what. You can look up to all of them. Shumway likes how tri-parenting has worked out so far. He wants to do it again, this time with his husband and female friend.
Oh, good.
Aww. This is a story that could never have been written in any other time period in the history of the world except right now. We'll give you that probably tomorrow, a little on tri-parenting. You know, something we didn't hit yesterday that I wish we would have is the sad news about Carrie Fisher and her autopsy.
Yep, she passed away from sleep apnea. said.
No.
Yeah,
it's very true. When you see the description of what she had in her system, it doesn't seem like sleep apnea. I hate to go out on a limb.
The primary cause of death, Pat. That's what the coroner says.
Sleep apnea.
Now, it could have been.
So she died from snoring?
It could have been.
No, sleep apnea is really dangerous. You have it. Pat, you have it really bad. Unfortunately, Pat has claustrophobia, also really bad, that he can't wear any of the masks or anything else.
Right.
They have changed a lot, by the way.
If you were to have a little heroin in your system, that might affect
your sleep apnea breathing
as well. Yeah, it affects.
So
slows down your breathing a little bit. She had a little heroin. A little cocaine.
A little cocaine and heroin.
Okay. Some methadone.
Right. Methadone does well.
Some ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
That was it.
She is like walking into a street version of Walgreens.
I mean, she had some Prozac. She had a prescription for Prozac, so she had a little bit of that in her.
Okay.
She had a little bit of Abilify and Lamictal. Those are all prescriptions.
It might be easier to list the drugs that were not.
And she also had a little oxycodone.
She didn't have
a prescription for those, so she just gave her a prescription
for the heroin and cocaine?
No, you don't need a prescription.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Oh really?
Yeah, yeah, that's over the counter.
Wow, that's OTC.
Over the windowsill of the door.
Same counter as you get the ecstasy from. You get the heroin, the cocaine.
Holy cow! Wow, what a cocktail!
Yeah, really sad.
Very, very sad.
You know. I don't know what happened.
And some alcohol.
Oh, and some alcohol. Yeah.
I mean, okay. what are you supposed to take it without drinking?
Well, I don't know if the heroin was marked.
Drinking something?
You shouldn't drink alcohol with the heroin, the cocaine, the ecstasy.
But
and
let's
the
not forget she died of sleep apnea.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, that was the primary cause.
Sure.
That's really sad.
It sure is.
Yeah, it is.
Really sad. What was happening in her life that
I don't know, but I mean, that cocktail is like, that's what was getting her through the day. Right, all the prescription drugs and the other little drugs. I mean, she wasn't. If that's in her system, and the heroin was, they couldn't tell how much was in because the family didn't want them to get a full toxicology report.
Oh, so this is just a partial.
This is what they could get. So you know, some of the drugs were saying maybe 3 days old or something. You know, in her system, had been in her system for 3 days. So that was just what was getting her through the day.
My understanding, is that she, there's a lot of stress in her life because she was leaving the whole Star Wars thing to go sell facial cream. There's a new facial cream on the market. Yeah, she was going to
leave. With Joanna Gaines?
Yes. You heard about this?
Yes, I have. Yeah,
they were going into business together in the facial cream industry.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That is really interesting.
It's a big turn of events.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, let me let you in on the joke here that Stu just told. What was it? Sunday, I click onto The Blaze and I'm reading a story, and it's a story where it says, these are the undisputed facts, and then these are the contested facts, and I'm reading this story, and I'm like, oh, wow, that's great. I got to click on that. Okay, good. Yeah, wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting. And then right in between it says, breaking or something like that. Joanna Gaines leaves... HGTV.
I think it was
TV
the
show.
Real reason she's leaving.
Yeah,
didn't it say
that's
that?
What it was.
And
the
real reason she's leaving. And I thought, what? She's not leaving this show.
I didn't know she was leaving that show. And so it said
same thing.
Yeah, it says sponsored content.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's just say that as the owner of The Blaze and somebody who is now getting more involved with The Blaze. I wasn't happy to see that sponsor content.
Why? I mean, that's an important story. You don't care about the Joanna Gaines thing?
First of all, I could not believe it was true.
If you don't know Joanna Gaines, she's part of Fixer Upper on HGTV. It's a
huge
show.
And
this couple, Chip and Joanna Gaines, you know.
Yeah, and it said, you know, the story was written in such a way that Chip was fine with her moving on, mm-hmm. you know, because she really has found herself. And I'm like, what? That's not possible.
Yeah.
How's the show going on with just Chip and without Joanna? They're great together. No, that doesn't make any sense at all.
And when you looked into it, as we both did the same day, independently of, I didn't know you'd been looking into it. And you find out there is zero truth to any of it.
Zero.
And you go to her
like zero, not like kind of
or maybe rumor.
Zero.
And this story is so prevalent on so many websites, the sponsored content from this facial cream company. That they have addressed it on their website, and there have been numerous stories about her denial of it.
Yeah.
She was on the Today Show or someplace and said, it's absolutely a lie.
Right.
Absolutely no
okay.
truth at
so,
all.
So here's the amazing thing. So I see this, and then I go to their website, and I'm like, she's not leaving.
Right, because it says she's leaving to sell this facial cream, which I think is a detail. And,
okay, so that part I
which
didn't believe.
Which makes sense. Okay. I mean, you would jump right into the facial cream industry if you're only making $5 or $10 million.
See, I didn't believe that, but I thought there was a possibility that she was leaving, and maybe she's going to help promote this, but that's not why she's leaving.
Right.
You know, I thought there was a spin on it. No, it's all absolutely 100% provably false.
Mm-hmm. But other than that.
But other than that, it's absolutely accurate. And so when I get in on Monday, I call up.
Because it was actually on The Blaze.
It was on The Blaze.
Sponsored content on The Blaze.
It was unbelievable. And so I went to our sales department, and I said, Omar, who is great, I said, Omar, and he said, Chip and Joanna Gaines? And I said, yeah, what's the deal? And as it turns out, you buy this, there's like this ad agency, I don't remember what it was called, but this is, it's an ad service that all they do is they buy a place in mass on all of these websites.
How a lot of digital ads are purchased. Right. They're not like actually being approved individually by the website.
Right. And so they just fill that ad when it becomes available. They fill that ad with whatever. And so we apparently have gone to this place several times going, no, not to run. And what they do is they just take that one out and then they just replace it with another bad ad. Okay.
Yeah, there's another one, and I think it's somewhat related, that says LeBron James and Michael Jordan have this sort of war going on with each other. There's some war of words with Michael Jordan.
There was one
also completely false.
There was one about Anderson Cooper and Stephen Hawking taking this drug that enhances your concentration and everything else. And I'm like,
and male vitality.
Yeah, that, right. Tom Brady has that one, I think.
Okay. So none of these are true.
Jeez.
And so this ad company so we called and Omar said, okay, we can drop it, but they're just going to replace it with another one. And I'm like, well, no, I mean, you talked to them, right? I mean, you told them that that was absolutely not true. And they're like, yeah, they're very well aware. That's absolutely not true. And I'm like, how the hell?
And they don't care.
They don't care. They don't care.
I don't know how you can do that. How can you get away with that?
So Omar, so he calls me up later in the afternoon. I said, call them back. That's the crazy. Who doesn't care? And he said, I'll call him back. So called him back, and he wrote to me later in the afternoon, and he said, they're off. We've canceled. We're not using them. We're not allowing them to buy anything ever again. And I said, thank you. And then I was stupid enough to say, How much did that just cost? It was $200,000 a month.
Oh my gosh.
$200,000 a month.
That's $2.4 million a year.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
I'm just giving you a different
Yeah, well, you want to give him the full picture.
Perspective.
Now,
is there any way did I tell you that Carrie Fisher was selling face cream?
So here's the thing. That's why people don't care. That's why those ads last.
Right.
Because it's a lot of money to lose.
No one is willing to lose that kind of money. And it answered the question when I said they don't care. Well, no, because most companies don't care either. They'll just take the ad. And I said, how can we possibly have any credibility if we're taking ads that we ourselves know are 100% false?
You can't.
You can't. My credibility, even though I don't approve all the ads and everything else, and we try to do our best, but this kind of stuff, there are ads that are filled just automatically.
You leave that on the website, you're not even trying.
You're not even trying.
Because that's a bald-faced lie.
Right.
They know it. They don't care about it.
You have put money over integrity. And I have news for you. I don't know how. I mean, Omar, I have to share this email from him. I said, that's $2.4 million. That's a lot of money. How you're going to replace that, right? And he wrote this great email. He's like, "Onward and upward, brother. yeah, that helps our credibility. That's the right thing to do. We're going to be okay. Thank God. But he's right, I think. That's why I want you to know our sponsors, the ones that we, especially the ones we endorse, but the ones that we know, like this radio show, there are ads that we sell and know, and then the network just puts other ads, and then the local stations put other ads. But our local stations and our network, you know, we know the credibility of our local stations. So when somebody is selling an ad locally, you can trust that ad is true, because we all know, me at this level, the stations at their level, the network at their level. We may not know what each other are doing, but we're all trying to do the right thing. So when you see an ad or you hear an ad, frequent those people, because this is one of the problems that conservatives have. Because they have blocked us every step of the way from getting the American Airlines of the world, because the left has boycotted and put us on no-buy lists, we have fewer and fewer options available to us. And because of that, many people, and we did for a while too, take ads like that. And you just can't do it. But then you're left in the position of, well, what do you take? That's why I think Bill O'Reilly is going into business for himself. And that's why we appreciate your subscription at The Blaze. Your subscription helps us. You may never even watch the TV. It helps us write stories and keep the doors open.
Sounds like there might be a little extra ad space, too, for somebody with legitimate products to advertise on The Blaze.
Well, to me, Glenn just sounds like someone who does not want the world to know about the true benefits of that facial cream. Sounds like to me.
Right?
Well, sounds like someone working for big beauty, big pharmaceuticals that wants to push down the truth.
Let me tell you something.
What it sounds like to me.
Let me tell you something. Next hour, I wasn't going to say this now, but I'm going to just tease the announcement. Next hour, I have a major announcement. I'm leaving the industry for foot cream.
Oh, wow.
And that will happen tomorrow. Our sponsor this half hour, the United States Concealed Carry Association. They are the first and the largest organization dedicated to protecting responsible gun owners before, during, and after a self-defense incident. This is critical if you carry a gun. That's why I'm a supporter, and I'm proud to have them on. Also, because 4th of July is just a couple of weeks away, the USCCA is celebrating our forefathers and our Second Amendment with the Great American Giveaway. Five lucky winners will receive $1,776.1776 to buy the gun and ammo of their choice. Now, instead of just drawing one winner, we're going to draw five winners. All you have to do is go to protectanddefend.com. Five winners of $1,776 to buy the gun and the ammo of your choice. $1,776 can be yours. Protectanddefend.com. Enter now. Nothing to buy. Read the official rules on the site. It's protectanddefend.com. And while you're carrying a gun without protection, make sure you check out the protection that they have to offer. There is nothing else out there like it, and believe me, you need it. Protectanddefend.com. Just go there. Register to win right now. Protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I mean, we're just talking about this facial cream scam that is absolutely unbelievable.
I have breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news.
Shock the nation.
Oh no!
What?
Donald Trump is resigning from the presidency.
No, shut up.
He's getting into the facial cream industry.
I knew it.
No, wait. Are you making that up, or is that an ad they're running?
They're not running it yet, but I'm sure they will.
The number of people that they have done this to, and honestly, I wrote because a friend of mine was involved in one of these facial cream things, and I wrote and I'm like, how are you not suing them? It's not worth it. It's not worth it. It'll cost you so much money to lawyer up.
Yeah.
And they make this company so they can just shut it down, start something else, shut it down, start something else. And think of the credibility that they are burning through. They're burning through all of these people, these faces that you like or trust. They're just burning them and their credibility. And people look at them and say, it's got to be true. They would sue. They couldn't get away with that.
Right.
Yes, they can in today's crazy world.
And they are.
And they are getting away with it unless more people say, I'm not running those ads. It's not worth it at any cost.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. You have so much to worry about, trying to hang on to your job, trying to educate your kids, just trying to make it through. I don't know about you, but there are days that I just go, I get up in the morning, I'm just like, my goal for today is just to make it back here to go back to bed. Maybe that's just me, but life is tough. We want to arm you with information so you can prepare yourself for what's coming, both good and bad. A lot of great things happening in the world of technology, a lot of great things on the horizon, but there's also some really big bumps in the road as well. We are thrilled to have back with us Danielle DiMartino Booth. She is the author of Fed Up. She's a woman who worked on Wall Street and then said, this is sickening, got out, started to expose it for the Dallas Morning News. The Fed here in Dallas, run by Richard Fisher, or was run by Richard Fisher at the time, he was, I think, brilliant and one of the really good guys in the Fed. He saw her work and said, hey, she should come to work for here. She was working for the Fed kind of in a lower position. She was ringing the bell about 2008 in the collapse. Most people made fun of her for that. The collapse happened, and Richard Fisher said, you need to be my right-hand man on information and what is coming. So that's what she did. He left the Fed. She left the Fed. She is now ringing the bell on what's next. What's coming? Another 2008? She'll describe what she's seeing in the last few weeks and last couple of months since we saw her last. We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Cause we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Let's get your circulation going.
Yes. Welcome to the program, Daniel DiMartino Booth. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Very good. A lot has happened since we last talked. The world is in a crazy place that we are literally last week dodging bullets that could change the world. We have Syria and Russia this week with a downed Syrian jet that we took down, and Russia said, oh yeah, by the way, we're canceling our hotline, and if you cross the Euphrates, we'll shoot you down. So we have that on the horizon. We have North Korea with now three aircraft carriers, and they just dumped basically this poor kid out of Cincinnati. They just dumped a practically dead body on our doorstep.
Well, he is now.
Yeah. Almost like a Don Corleone move, just saying, hey, here's your trash.
The aftermath of years of doing nothing.
Yes. Yes. And then last week, a shooting that could have changed the world. I don't know if you heard last hour, but I presented a scenario. Any thoughts on that scenario? How crazy did that scenario sound to you?
It didn't sound so crazy. I mean, there is something called the Plunge Protection Team, and it's dragged out in times of extreme market duress. And
was that around, or was one of the first times we did it in the 30s? Because I know the Rockefellers of the world and the Astors of the world kind of stepped to the plate and said, "I'm going to dump money in, and you're going to do it, too."
Well, bear in mind, before 1913, with the establishment of the Federal Reserve, when there were economic calamities, you know, somebody like J.P. Morgan would bring people together in his parlor room and say, okay, guys, we got to write some checks here. We got to save the world.
Right.
And that's and it was his realization that he was mortal that brought about the Fed after the panic of 1907.
Mm-hmm.
Really. But even if you go to modern history, you know, Hank Paulson, others, they brought the biggest banks into a room and they said, we've got trouble. You're all going to have to pony up. And a lot of the banks were saying, no.
I know.
And,
you know, what's really
crazy, and Uncle Sam looks down and says, no's not an option.
I know. What's really crazy is I have a friend who was in that room that night, that Sunday night. And he and his bank said, no, we're not doing it.
Don't need the money.
Right. We don't need the money. We're not doing it. And the banks get blamed. And I think the banks deserve a lot of blame. But the banks get blamed for this. When it really was the United States government, the Treasury, that said, no, you are taking it. In fact, the exact quote from Paulson was, you are, no one is leaving this room until you sign.
Until you brandish your scarlet letter.
Yes.
Put it on. Take the blame.
Yes. Okay, so you said a few weeks ago when you were here, that the one thing you were looking for, I asked you for signs of the economy. What do we look for as a sign that things are not going well? If you pay attention at all to the Fed, as I do, and I think this, I'm a little more than the average person to where I'll actually just read what Yellen has done, but I'm not going to read deeply. The story that I heard last week was, or was it this week? Things are going so well.
Oh, things are great.
Right? The economy is doing so well.
Smoking hot.
Right, that they have to raise the interest rate again.
I'm sorry, who's in the White House? Oh, wait.
I'm just.
But you digress.
I'm just trying to figure out what has changed to make things so great that we're raising interest rates.
Well, things have gotten worse, so we should tighten so that we don't have to tighten weight. There's no logic there.
Right.
The head of the New York Fed gave a speech a few days ago, Bill Dudley. Bear in mind, this is the vice chairman of the Federal Open Market Committee that sets interest rates. If Janet Yellen, if something happens to her and she's got the flu and she can't make the FOMC meeting, he's the guy in charge. People do not realize that the guy in charge of the New York Fed is really the number two in command at the Fed.
Okay.
He made a speech that said the economy's doing so well that we're afraid the unemployment rate is going to crash. His words, crash. And therefore, we're going to have to get out in front of this and tighten more so we don't have to tighten so much more down the road that we put the economy into recession.
Exactly. Why would we be afraid of the unemployment rate
crashing?
That would be, oh my gosh, panic. We have a 0% unemployment rate.
Right. Well,
that doesn't make sense.
So, you know, the last time the unemployment rate was where it was, wages were growing about at 4%. Today, with the same unemployment rate, wages are running at 2.5%. Yawn. We wonder why there's a shadow economy. We wonder why people are driving Uber at night. There's a reason. Their wages aren't growing. Their paycheck has barely moved and not kept up with inflation. And Bill Dudley is worried that the unemployment rate is going to crash and make wage inflation run away. Sorry. The average working Joe wants their paycheck to go up. There's nothing intuitive about
wage
the reasoning
inflation.
Right now at the Fed. Nothing.
See, this is the problem. They're trying to convince the American people that there is no inflation. And on some things...
Well, there's very little wage inflation.
Yes.
That doesn't take much convincing.
Correct. And on some things, there isn't inflation. But on other things, there is gigantic inflation.
Look at home prices.
Yes.
Today we had a report that came out that showed that home prices are growing at 5.8%. They're at record high prices right now. No wonder the average working Joe can't afford to buy a house and has finally begun to push back. Look at college tuition. I buy a gallon of milk every day to feed my four gigantic growing children. I can tell you that gallon of milk keeps getting more expensive.
It does.
It does.
Does.
These are not figments of our collective imagination. My retired mother tells me about what her copay is and what her drugs cost at the pharmacy. These are real things.
Okay. So you said one of the things to look for. So wait, before we get on that, why are they raising the rate then?
Well, the Gallo's humor is that they wanted to make sure that they kept Trump in place. So if you slam the economy into a recession by tightening financial conditions, thus forcing a recession, then you've got Trump's attention, and he doesn't put independent people, independent thinkers, dissenters in at the Fed who ruffle the dove's feathers. Now, give me 2 seconds.
Yep.
Last Wednesday, the day the Federal Reserve raised interest rates, there was a story strategically placed on the front page of the Wall Street Journal that said Gary Cohn is looking for replacements for the Fed. And by the way, before you even had to open the page to get to the rest of the story, Janet Yellen's name was thrown out there as being a potential contender. Do you think the administration has folded to the pressure? Because something's got to make the Fed back off tightening interest rates.
The rumor is, and I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what happened to Ronald Reagan. That Ronald Reagan, Volcker got in, and Ronald Reagan said, oh, you don't like the Fed? Oh, okay. And that's when...
Try me.
Interest rates went through the roof.
And he had a recession 18 months into office.
Correct.
Trust me, somebody has read Trump this playbook. Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
I'm sure he read it himself.
So what should the president do?
I would like for him to stand firm. I wrote a whole book about it. I mean... We need independent thinkers. We need people at the Fed who are on the receiving end of their own policies, not bureaucrats who've been their entire lives in academics who don't even understand the implications of the decisions they make. They don't understand what they've done to a generation of baby boomers trying to save for retirement.
Who's around the president that can tell him this?
Steve Cohen and Steve Mnuchin.
And do you think he stopped listening to them now?
No. I don't.
Good.
In that same Wall Street Journal story, Steve Cohen was quoted as saying, basically, I have faith in the Fed. The Fed knows what it's doing. They need to be left alone. I mean, these are the things that just stand up the hair on the back of my head. They really do.
So what should we watch for or be wanting the president to do? What would be a sign that he's pushing back on them?
If he comes out with a nominee to replace one of the three current open vacancies that does not comply with what the media has been suggesting those individuals should be.
When will he make those decisions?
He's going to have to make them pretty soon. I mean, the fact that he's been in office for, 150 days or so?
Yeah.
And has not taken the opportunity to name a single individual to put up to the Senate is questionable.
How will they fare in the Senate?
Last I checked, the Republicans still have...
Yeah, but I don't know what that means.
Well...
I don't know what that means anymore.
Okay, so it's undefined.
Yeah.
But I think that given, especially the representatives from Texas,
yeah.
Hensarling, Brady, they've been pushing for reform at the Fed. I think they thought that we would have seen some independence reintroduced at the Fed by now. I dare say in private, they're probably a little frustrated that they haven't, because there are leaders inside the Senate. There are people on the Hill who will push through truly independent nominees.
Okay. Now let's go to the next thing that you said we should watch for, and that is automobiles.
Yeah. 5 months of weakness in a row.
What does that mean to you? What should that tell the average person?
Yesterday, a report came out. We know that automobile defaults delinquencies are rising. We know that payments are beginning to cripple households. We know that, especially in places where people are commuting, they have to have their car to get to work. So it's the last thing they want to stop making a payment on. And the repo man can swoop in really quickly and just hit a kill switch. And you're not turning your car on anymore. And he's going to come and repossess it. But we've seen reports come out in the last few weeks that show that the 2015 vintage of car loans made is going to be, that subprime car loans made in 2015 will reset, become the worst performing ones on record.
Holy cow.
We know that. And yesterday, Experian came out with a report that showed that credit card delinquencies have started to tick up as well. So you're seeing a trickle down in terms of household stresses rising.
And anything on the horizon in the next few that you are looking at and say, this could be the real big tripwire? Anything that
the
you're
Cheesecake
waiting for?
Factory came out last week with a report that said things are really worse than we were anticipating they would be. If restaurants, which employ 10.6 million Americans, if the restaurant industry begins to follow brick and mortar retail into the abyss, we are in the soup. They employ lots of people. A lot of these big restaurant chains, their footprints are too big, and they're going to have to start following the JCPenney's, the Macy's of the world, down the path of downsizing. This is not good news for people whose skills are not transferable.
That's why I'm going to Cheesecake Factory today to support the cause.
Me too.
I was thinking about that myself.
Yeah,
that
I could go for some turtle cheesecake. Bring it.
The name of the book, Daniel DiMartino Booth, the name of the book is Fed Up, an insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America. A lot of people have been saying, you know, we want to disband the Federal Reserve. We want to have checks and balances on the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. Great. Read her book to actually educate yourself on what the Federal Reserve is, what they do, how it works, where they have gone wrong. Fed Up. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Our sponsor this half hour is American Financing. You ready to sell your home? Now might be a good time to sell your home. Might be a really good time to refinance as Yellen is starting to move the interest rates up. You might want to get in on a refinancing loan right now. A lot of people have bad experiences with mortgages. That's where American Financing comes in. They're salary-based mortgage consultants. So mortgages, when you say, oh, I hope the bank gives me this mortgage, they're not giving it to you. They're selling it to you. You have to be a customer, a consumer that comes in and says, what are you giving me? What is it you can do for me? And then you have to be smart enough to go, yeah, you're giving too much. No, that sounds crazy. American Financing, I never took them on as a client until after 08. They wanted me to represent them before 08. And I said, no, I don't believe in mortgage companies right now. You're all out of control. No, we're not like that. After 08 and the crash, they didn't have any problems because they are not putting you into something that you shouldn't have. Responsible people. You want to have your pre-qualification done in just a few minutes. You can close in as fast as 10 days, but they're going to put you into the right loan for you. American Financing. American Financing at 1-800-906-2440, 800-906-2440, or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
The Glenn Beck Program.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
We have Daniel DiMartino on with us for a few more minutes because we started talking during the break about Illinois. Illinois is in financial meltdown, and I want you to listen to this line. We talked about this earlier. Top financial official just warned 100% of the state's monthly revenue will be eaten up by court-ordered payments. Now, what that is when we were at Fox, remember I used Illinois and said, these pensions, these unions, it's a sham. And when the chicken comes home to roost, there's no money left. It's now happening in Illinois.
Right.
And you said that
there's an op-ed out there today, look it up, that said we should potentially jettison Illinois, it's as bad as Venezuela. Let's get rid of it. Let's break the state up into many little pieces and have the neighboring states absorb it because they cannot. This is year three with no budget. Moody's came out last week, and they were downgraded to one notch above junk, a junk bond state. Illinois is the fifth largest economy in this country, and it is in a state of shambles because the chickens, as you say, have come home to roost.
How many states are approaching this?
Well, I mean, you can talk about New Jersey. You can talk about Rhode Island. I mean, it's a really small state with a really bad problem.
What do you think the geniuses are going to do?
As in?
You know, what do the geniuses come up with to get us out of this?
It remains to be seen. These are issues that are popping up with the stock market at record highs. Think about that.
Holy cow. Holy cow. Danielle, we appreciate your look at things. We'd love to have you back. The name of the book is Fed, Insider's Take on Why the Federal Reserve is Bad for America. More in a second.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Man, we have so many stories that we have promised all day that we were going to get to, and she just scared the hell out of me. I don't know if I want her on as a guest again.
She's not the only one that she's scared. You're not the only one that she's scared.
You know, I read this story, but it didn't really come home to me. I read this story earlier. Illinois careens into financial meltdown. Not even the lottery is safe. Okay. That probably should not be the headline. Here's the meat of the story. Top financial official just warned 100% of the state of Illinois' monthly revenue, so that means every single tax dollar they bring in, will be eaten up by court-ordered payments. Now, what is that? The court in Illinois has said payments to pensioners cannot be cut. They must be paid. So the state has overpromised people for their pensions like crazy. They have overpromised the firemen and the police. Remember when I was on Fox and I did that little pyramid and I showed and I said, when this thing starts to unravel, you need like 500 firemen for every one that is retired. Well, we're here now. And if you think of this 100, that means no roads, no schools, no teachers, no one is being paid for anything. Nothing can be painted. There is zero amount of cash because 100% of the budget is going to pay the court-ordered pensions. So now, what do you do? I love this quote. This quote, we're like a banana republic. No, you're not like a banana republic. You are a banana republic. This is from the Illinois House Speaker. Nobody in Illinois is considering bankruptcy because, first of all, it's not allowed. Oh, okay. And second of all, it would damage the reputation of the state.
Right.
Yeah, probably would.
Right. Is having all of your money go to pensions that you shouldn't have promised and can't afford is also hurting the reputation of the state.
And they have such a fine reputation. I hope he tagged all the politicians in jail to that email.
Yeah. Now here's what she said that scared the life out of me. Okay, we know that. We knew that was coming. It's a little scary that you know now it's here. But did you hear the last thing? What's the last thing she said? We just had Daniel DeMartino Booth from the Fed trying to explain, don't listen to the Fed. Don't listen to the Fed. What did she say last night?
She talked about how great the stock market was.
She said, this is happening with the stock market at an all-time high. Why is that important? That's important because these pension funds, like the California Teachers Association, that fund is, you know, probably billions and billions of dollars.
Should be flush with money with the stock market the way it is.
The stock market, you need an X percentage. What is it? A minimum of like 6 or 7% of return to be able to afford the pensions all the way in the future. Well, if you left your money in 2008, look at the percentage of returns that you have now. Yeah. That shouldn't be a problem.
and they're out of money at the top of the stock market, what happens if the stock market just resets to 15,000 as opposed to 21? What happens then? There's no way these states make
it. We'll all have to get into the facial cream industry.
That's a good point.
Join Joanna Gaines in the facial cream industry.
Somebody take me off on this, on something that we have promised that we were going to talk about today. Somebody take me away from this. Take, please, because that's terrifying.
The Han Solo directors got fired.
This is big.
Yeah.
On the, you know, the new Star Wars spinoff.
Yeah.
On Han Solo.
Now, did you see why they were arguing with each other? I mean, I don't know who hired these two guys.
Creative differences, right?
Yeah, but you know what the creative differences were.
Yeah, they're doing a comedic spin, apparently, and more improv.
Okay, so here's the deal. One director, and I think he's the guy, I think from the Lego movie.
And
I don't remember which one's
Freedom. Yeah.
Okay, so one of them is very sarcastic and wants to be funny and thinks that Han Solo should be very sarcastic and funny. Mm-hmm. The other director... And these guys get along, but they just couldn't in this because you can't bat. They couldn't reconcile their differences here. The other director said, no, Han Solo is not sarcastic. He's an ass.
He's definitely sarcastic, right? But he's not funny.
He's not funny.
Right.
The other one said, no, I want to make sure everybody knows he's selfish and quite honestly, a little mean.
Yeah, and here's the quote. According to an insider, people need to understand that Han Solo is not a comedic personality. He's sarcastic and selfish.
Yes. So the other thing is one believes in just this, hey, we're just going to catch it on the fly. Let's just improvise. The other guy is, no. Every word, I want action tied to it. Every word on the page, I want to know where the camera is going to be on the page. And the other guy's like, no, we don't need to go through all that. Let's just shoot it.
Well,
these guys are not compatible.
I think the two directors were on the same page. They were clashing with Lawrence Kasdan, who's the writer of the original.
Right.
I read it, Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back.
I read it as there was a three-way problem.
Yeah.
That these guys
between
get along.
Both of them and Kasdan. Okay. And Kasdan is the one who's saying, no, we need to stick to the script. And he needs to be sarcastic and selfish. He's not a comedic figure. And so they released a thing that, unfortunately, our vision and process weren't aligned with our partners on this project. We normally aren't fans of the phrase creative differences, but for once, this cliche is true.
Did you see also who they're thinking about replacing him with? Replacing the two with? Maybe Ron Howard?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
He'd be good.
It'd be interesting.
That's the ultimate gig, right? I mean, if you're getting to that Star Wars franchise, it's basically the best gig you can have.
Can you tell me, did Lucasfilm, is that what sold to Disney?
Yes.
Yeah, $4 billion for that franchise,
okay,
which was
so
an
incredible
bargain.
They're still calling these, because I saw the last, Rogue, and it said Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
But that is wholly owned subsidiary of Disney now.
I don't, the franchise was sold to Disney, but I mean, Lucasfilm is still involved in some ways.
But George Lucas isn't.
I mean, I think in some ways.
No, he's not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But remember when...
He took the $4 billion payoff, but I do...
And one of them said, I mean, he was kind of testy when the first big Star Wars film came out without him. He said, oh, no, Disney made it very clear they don't want my input, so I haven't seen anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of it.
Smart, Disney.
Yeah.
Keep going down that road.
That is the first time I've looked at Disney in a while and went, yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good job.
Well, I mean, hopefully he's not making decisions like these new superhero movies are doing. Like, for example, they only paid Gal Gadot, the Wonder Woman actress.
Mm-hmm. Pay her anything she wants.
They paid her $300,000 for her movie. And
paid
the old Superman $14 million. The guy who was like a nobody, and then he made one movie, and they paid him $14 million. Do you believe that? It's an outrage, isn't it?
Is it true?
No, of course not.
No, I didn't think so.
It's not, of course, true. Gadot did earn $300,000 for Wonder Woman, which at first blush seems low. It was always going to be one of their tentpole movies. Shouldn't she have received more? But her relatively low paycheck is actually par for the industry. The way the model works, especially with regards to superhero films, where the brand is more important than the actor, is that the actor gets a salary around $300,000 for their early appearances, and then they can negotiate for more when a film is a success and they're brought back for sequels. As Vulture points out, $300,000 is what Chris Evans made for Captain America, the first Avenger. He now makes a lot more than that. $14 million for the Superman guy actually includes many bonuses for box office performance and might include multiple films, and as such is not a base salary. So the left was going crazy, like, this is sexism. They're paying her $300,000 and him $14 million. Yeah, not apples to apples at all.
She was a relative unknown.
Right, and so was he, but that's why they're comparing him.
I know that, but she was a relative unknown. She also did not sign, it's my understanding, did not sign for multiple movies. She signed for one.
She gets to get now negotiate an eight-figure paycheck for the next one.
I would much rather negotiate after one hit movie where I'm sorry, but she is now Wonder Woman.
Right.
And she, you know, you change Wonder Woman. It's like, I can't take Spider-Man anymore. Oh, okay. I just can't take Spider-Man. And Batman is pissing me off. You know, they're coming out with another stupid Ben Affleck thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ben Affleck movie. That Batman movie was awful. Why didn't you just take the Batman series that you had and build on that? You had three great Batmans. Why would you flush it down the toilet and totally change everything?
It's weird.
Doesn't make any sense.
It's weird.
Yeah.
They're going to have to change the Wonder Woman, though, because Gal Gadot just quit to join the facial cream industry.
Oh, my gosh!
Really?
She quit.
Wow, that must be good facial cream.
It's really good facial cream. I guess it must work well.
She expects to make about 80 times what she made on
Wonder Woman. Wow.
And the other thing you have to remember, the Man of Steel movie, which was released in 2013, it's thought of as a big bomb. It did make $668 million
worldwide. Right?
Yeah. I mean, so it wasn't. You're going to make some cash when your movie grosses $668 million dollars in the box office.
The argument regarding that is the other stuff. Should have made a lot more, though, right?
Which one?
The Superman Batman.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument, and obviously they believe
that. It should be a $1 billion franchise.
Considering what they've done since.
Oh, but it was an awful movie.
Right. That's my point.
Yeah.
Are you talking Batman and Superman?
Man of Steel as well.
It was awful. Yeah. DC Comics, you know, I've never seen anybody with a bigger opportunity than DC Comics. And whoever's running it, you should let children run your DC Comics.
I will
say. Because you're making deals and choices on things that children wouldn't even make.
I got to say, I didn't want to do this.
Oh, boy.
I did not want to do this on the air. I wanted to take you into a private meeting and do this, but we're right here, and I can't resist. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was terrible. It was a terrible, terrible film.
Thank you.
It was not even mediocre. It was terrible, and I loved the first one.
I did too.
The sequel.
It's a mess.
How did you think that was a perfect movie?
I thought it was great.
It was all nothing.
Somebody said it was a mess.
Yes, Pat Gray.
Oh, that's right.
Again, the battle between Pat Gray movie taste and Glenn Beck movie
taste has
been settled. There's a consensus. Yeah. Science is done.
I agree with you, Glenn. I think it was a great movie.
You didn't even see it.
First of all, you didn't see it. Number one. All really canned, trying way too hard to be funny with their funny lines in this one. It was not natural at all. Lots of stilted, terrible comedy. Number two, how did you get past the nonstop sentimental puffery? All throughout the movie, every 10 seconds was another like, oh, here's a nice sentimental scene of these two characters that used to disagree coming together and having this nice moment over and over and over again. And third, if Transformers doesn't even set the standard, it's as if they had every special effect possible on a keyboard and they just mashed their hands against it the entire movie to see if something happened. There's nothing to it. It was just nonstop explosions and lasers.
The new Transformers
with terrible writing. Even the acting wasn't good. And I like the actors in it. That was a disaster to me.
Seriously.
I was so excited about it after your review. And then Pat was like, I don't know. It was kind of a mess, I thought. And I was like, well, I got to go see it. I'm so excited. That was terrible. How did you like that movie? I'm flabbergasted you
liked
that.
I'll have to go watch it again. I loved it. And so here's the thing. I went to see Wonder Woman based on your guys'
I have not seen it. I have not seen Wonder Woman.
Well, of course you're not going to like it as much as I did because you got terrible taste in movies.
Oh my gosh! How did you take the opening 14 hours of fake, horrible acts? accents and fakey. Oh, I couldn't take it.
It didn't really bother me.
Yeah, because you were looking at Robin Wright and all the women.
Was anybody speaking?
Exactly right. Here's our sponsor this half hour, Goldline. Holy cow, I'm glad we took a break from...
Those were not the stories we were supposed to talk about, no. I guess. But
anything to stop us from the idea that Illinois is the first state to have 100% of their budget going to...
Pensions.
How do you survive that? You can't cut those.
It's almost as if socialism doesn't work.
Yes.
That's the thought. I don't know if that's...
You can't cut those, because if you cut those pensions, now you have all of the people who were promised their pensions. Now they've planned for their life. Now what are you going to do? You're going to put them out on the street? What are you going to do? Boy, this is just stupid. We are in the place with North Korea. We're in the place with Russia. We're in the place with the Middle East. We're in the place now with the immigrant problem over in Europe. We're in the place where you're starting to see the Bubba effect happen. We're in these places because nobody wanted to recognize the truth. Oh, maybe I liked Guardians of the Galaxy because it was an escape.
Yes, it was. From good filmmaking.
I want you to go to Goldline now at 866-465-3546. For as little as $2,500, we've been talking the last couple of days. They've had such success with people for the $25,000, where you can get a year, a guarantee that your money is going to not fluctuate. You will not lose a dime up to a year if you go into your 401k or your IRA, or you just want to do it in cash, transfer into something else. A year for $25,000 and more, they will lock that price in, and if it goes down, they'll give you more gold. Well, they're going to do it now for as little as $2,500, and then they scale it up for 3 months. You're guaranteed that your money will not fluctuate for 3 months for $2,500. Nobody in the industry does this. I want you to call Goldline now. Read their risk information, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We're just talking about how bad all the other companies are trying to be, like Marvel Comics. You know, you've got another Spider-Man coming out, which... I mean, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is practically... I expect him to be on a speakerphone at some point. Yeah. Just like, oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm really Iron Man. And that's... you shouldn't put that mask on, kid. That's... yeah, don't swing too much.
It's just that bad.
He's dead inside at this point.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.